The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessary.
Good evening. You're listening to the Blake Radio Rainbow Soul, and this is Healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/findout to find out your risk of murder by medicine. Today's show is the attack against asthmatics. First, I want to recap the theme of this radio show, which is the competent practice of medicine according to the standard of care is the leading cause of death in America. Healing with Dr. Daniels is the place where you can get honest answers that can save your life. This is the place to get healing news you can use without any technical mumbo-jumbo. For guests, you can call in to 914-338-0695. Again, that number is 914-338-0695 if you have any questions for Dr. Daniels throughout the show. First, Dr. Daniels, can you give a review of information on deaths due to medical care and look at how death from the lack of medical access to health care compares to death from having access to health care?
Yes, thank you. That's really an interesting topic which really needs to be addressed because we hear so much about people not getting needed medical care and people dying because they did not get needed medical care. And it turns out that That does happen. There are 45 million Americans who don't have insurance, don't have access to care. And there are 45,000 people every year who die because they did not have access to medical care. And if you calculate that out, that's a death rate of 1 in 1,000. On the other hand, people who have access to medical care, that would be the population of the United States, 311 million, minus the 45 million, which leaves 266 million people who do have access to medical care, 742,000 of them die as a result of having that access. And so that's a death rate of 2.8 per 1,000. So literally three times as many people die because they have access to medical care than people who die because they do not have access to medical care. So between the two options, your chances of living are actually greater if you don't have access to medical care. That's really an interesting number.
Okay. Now that we know this, is that enough to protect us?
You know, I wish it was, but actually it isn't. Because you may suspect that the doctor is going to kill you or is going to give you therapy that's going to make you worse and lead to your death. But that really just amounts to a bunch of suspicion. And the next thing that you need to know is not only do you need to feel or believe the doctor is doing something harmful, it helps if you understand that the doctor also knows that he's doing something harmful. And when you have this knowledge on both parts, or at least the patient understanding that the doctor knows, then instead of feeling like you're suspicious or you're being paranoid, you realize, oh, my God, I'm a willing victim. And then the motivation to do something like walk out of the door or refuse the deadly offering gets a little stronger. But, you know, people are social beings. And because of our social nature, people don't often have the courage to act alone. By that I mean, often people know that what they're doing is dangerous, they'll know it's going to lead to their death, but they have well-meaning friends and relatives who say, you know, you got to go see the doctor, I want you to get this checked, get this test. And just that incredible social pressure, you know, many people have just gone down the path straight to the grave because of that social pressure from well-meaning friends and relatives who insist that they get checked out, who insist that they get this test, who insist that they take their medications on time. And so the next thing that needs to happen is you need to know, your friends and relatives need to know, but even more, they need to know, and they need to know that you know. And with that kind of pressure, what happens now is, okay, you know the doctor's killing you, you know your friends know the doctor's killing you, and you know that they know that you know the doctor's killing you. What does this mean? This means if something goes wrong, you can't run to your family or friends for sympathy because they're going to say, well, you knew that was going to happen. And just knowing you're not going to get any sympathy when things go wrong is enough added social pressure to help people do what's in their best interest in terms of saving their lives. But the next thing, the next level of knowledge and understanding is for the individual person who's in the hot seat at that time or under that risk of victimization to not only know that the doctor knows, but that the hospital knows, that the insurance company knows, and the drug companies making the medications know that these therapies are deadly. And with that understanding, then people become energized and they can really have the courage to stand up for themselves and at least walk away. Because then when they stand up and walk away, they know that they're going to have the support of their family, the support of their of their friends, in addition to having a long life. I have had patients who were very courageous who stood up and said, you know what, this is not working for me. I am refusing all therapy. I'm going to refuse this life-saving surgery. And they've come to my office, this one particular guy came to my office and said, you know, my family's upset with me because I won't have this life-saving surgery. And so they asked me to see one more doctor to get one more opinion. And so I told him I wanted to come see you. I said, well, what's the problem? So he told me the problem is, and of course they wanted to amputate. I said, well, you know, you're 76 years old. I said, you've made enough bad decisions in your life up to this point. You've lived this long. We're going to go with it. If you don't want the surgery, I say you shouldn't have the surgery. He said, great. Will you write a note for my family? And I wrote a note for his family. His family was very angry, very upset. They even called me at home that evening to denounce me for, you know, sealing their poor relative's fate. He was a wealthy man. He owned a business, and he was supporting the whole family with it. Well, long story short, he refused the surgery, and he lived another, to my knowledge, 10 years. Last time I knew, he was actually still alive. But that literally for about 5 years destroyed the family because people felt that by him rejecting the therapy, he was actually rejecting their love, their caring, and their affection. So in order for people to really use this knowledge, they need to share it. They need to share it. They need to educate their friends, educate their family, so they have the social support that they need to save their lives when the time comes. And so that's really, really important to do.
Wow, thank you. And for those that are just tuning in, this is the Break Radio, Rainbow Soul with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com /find out to find out your risk for murder by medicine. Also, if you have any questions throughout the show, please give Dr. Daniels a call at 914-338-0695. Again, that's 914-338-0695. Now, Dr. Daniels, can you tell us a little more about asthmatic basics?
Yeah, asthma is a disease of basically of the lungs, of the airways. And the airways become narrow. And modern medicine would have you believe that these airways become narrow because the muscles contract and make the airways narrow. However, it's a little more than that. There's a lot of things that can make the airway narrow. There can be increased mucus production, and so you have a thick layer of mucus that narrows the airways, and the air can't move freely, and the person can't take in oxygen. And the thickness of this mucus makes it so the oxygen actually can't even get across the membrane into the blood to get oxygen into the blood. And so the another thing that makes the airways narrow is the inflammation can actually cause the very thin muscles there to swell up, and then they swell up, and again, the oxygen transfer can't take place or it's not as efficient. But there's unanimous agreement that asthma is definitely a disease of inflammation. And so another definition of asthma is called reactive airway disease. It means the airways in the lungs get narrow because they're in response to inflammation or irritation. And the doctor's going to know, first of all, the patient's going to know he has asthma because he'll be short of breath and he'll make a wheezing noise, kind of like a whistle. And that's kind of a hallmark of asthma, as well as fatigue and tiredness. So this is the basics of asthma.
That's great. And those that have just turned into us, again, this is the Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul, and this is Healing with Dr. Daniels. And today's topic is the assault against asthmatics. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/findout to find out your risk for murder by medicine. I understand you have some shocking admissions from the mainstream medical community themselves.
Yes, concerning asthma. You know, usually you expect, you know, you're going to have to go dig deep and far and, you know, consult these alternative fringe sources. But the Asthma Allergy Foundation of America, on its website, has some information that really, you know, kind of sums things up. First of all, they agree that it's a inflammatory illness. However, they feel it's exclusively inhaled agents, and that's pretty much the size of it. They declare very firmly there's absolutely no cure for asthma. Don't worry about it. It will never be cured. However, they mention, even though there's no cure, that's caused by inhaled agents, air pollution, allergies to cockroaches, and occupational dust. So it seems to me those are all factors that could be modified. They do mention a genetic predilection, you know, that they think it's genetic because people with one asthmatic parent only have a 33% chance of asthma, whereas if there's two asthmatic parents, there's a 77% chance of asthma. Now, if you use the classic Mendelian genetics, that doesn't really work out because it has to be multiples of 25%, and we really don't see that with this 33% here. But at any rate, the frequency of asthma has increased by 80% since 1980, and that's quite an increase, especially when the genetic makeup of the population has not changed by 80%. So there's something going on that's really making asthma take off. But the real revelation here is that there are 1,200 admissions every single day to the hospital for asthma. And the deaths from asthma is 3,285 people a year. That's not a lot of people, by the way, I mean, as deaths go. But what this tells us, though, is the number of hospital admissions as a ratio of the number dying is is less than 1%. Well, 1% death rate, whenever you go into the hospital, there's a 1% death rate, just from properly prescribed medications, from hospital-acquired infections, and from doctor errors. So those three things together will give you a 1% death rate just from being admitted to the hospital. And so we see that asthmatics, when they go into the hospital, their death rate is hovering pretty close to the 1% mark, but below it. So what that tells you then is that the deaths asthmatics experience when they go to the hospital appear to be exclusively the result of hospitalization itself. That is a shocking, shocking number. And so there's a few other mysteries here. So it turns out that deaths from asthma since 1980 have increased 50% in adults and over 80% for children. And this is really an interesting thing because you would expect that, you know, since most of the deaths occur in older people, why would this big surge occur more so in children? So there must be something going on in children in the last 30 years that's drastically changed, that's different. So something was not happening before the 1980s, but now after 1980s is happening to a great degree. And actually we're gonna find out, because we have some other documents, again, from mainstream medicine that reveal that as well. Now, another thing is that the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America says on their website is that African Americans are 3 times more likely to be admitted to the hospital than whites. All right, so maybe there's a difference there. However, African Americans are also 3 times more likely to die from asthma as whites. Now, this is really shocking, because the chance of death very tightly parallels the chance of being admitted to the hospital. Now, in medicine, just to play devil's advocate, we're often told, well, those people who are admitted to the hospital, they're sicker, and so they die in greater numbers. Whoa, wait a minute. If what they're doing at the hospital is so effective, shouldn't the people in the hospital end up dying in fewer numbers because they receive therapy? Or, on the other hand, if the death has nothing to do with the hospitalization itself, shouldn't the deaths among African Americans be much, 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 much higher because their asthmatic is maybe of a more severe nature? Or maybe their death rate would be much, much, much higher because they don't receive needed therapy? Not the case. So we have this very nice naturally occurring control here, where we have whites of a certain admission rate and a certain amount of deaths, and African Americans have 3 times the hospital admission rate and 3 times the amount of death. Again, another piece of information that definitely implicates hospitalizations in the deaths of asthmatics.
Well, that's very, very interesting. Now, can you specifically give our listeners the rundown of medical therapies for unrelated diseases that can cause or worsen asthma?
Yes. And this is really, I tell you, an eye-opener. Now, this information is as shocking as it may be. It comes straight from the physician's desk reference volume on drug interactions and side effects. This is not the regular PDR that your doctor gets in the mail every year for free. This is the one he's got to stretch and pay about $100 for it to get. So this book that has this information is not one your doctor is likely to have, because it's not given to him for free. He has to go out of his way to find it. He's got to check a special box. He's got to write an extra check and pay postage to get this one. But this is what the book says. And it's a very, very important book. And I will tell you, if you plan to take medications at all, it's worth even buying it. But it turns out that the risk of having asthma is increased literally from birth. It turns out that vaccines are implicated in the cause of asthma. And the vaccines implicated in the cause of asthma are vaccines that were not being given to children prior to 1980. In fact, many of them were not even being given prior to 1990. And so this one practice alone could explain it. So let me give you the rundown of the vaccines that cause this. First of all, Pediarix, this is a new combination vaccine. Parents were complaining, oh, my God, you're making my kid a pincushion. You're giving him 5-10 needles at a time. This is cruelty. And so a drug maker said, hey, we got a solution for this. We're going to combine diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, hepatitis B, and polio in one vaccine. Now, isn't that cool? Well, apparently a lot of parents thought so. So this vaccine, which causes asthma, is basically now being given to pretty much every kid at birth.
Wow.
Then we have, yeah, it's pretty impressive, isn't it? I guess asthma might go up by 80% just with this one little piece of therapy here. But it doesn't end there. There's Fluvix, Fluvix rather. And this is the flu shot, your common everyday flu shot, which is now being recommended for children who are in daycare, and being recommended for really everybody. And this flu shot causes asthma and asthmatic attacks. Then we have Gardasil. This is a vaccine that supposedly protects women or little girls from getting cervical cancer. Well, we won't even talk about whether or not little girls are sexually active and at what age. But even if everyone was sexually active starting at the age of 3, cervical cancer as a disease is not an issue until pretty late in life. I would say, yeah, I really haven't seen anyone with cervical cancer much below the age of 30. And so vaccinating little girls at the age of 10 to 15, you know, it might be just a little early, you know. But at any rate, the Gardasil vaccine, which is now being given to young ladies, with half the population, also causes asthma. Now, there's a vaccine for the older crowd, Zostavax, which is a vax against shingles. Shingles is something that older people can get. It's basically a second outbreak of chickenpox, but only it comes out again when people are older. And so that vaccine also causes asthma. So just with these vaccines causing asthma, that more than explains the 80% increase in children or childhood asthma. But not only that, the 80% increase in children dying from asthma, because to die from it, of course, first you have to get it. But it doesn't stop there. So this kid just got born, popped out of his mom's womb, and they've descended upon him with these asthma-causing vaccines. Then, as luck might have it, the kid might get some eczema. And eczema is an itchy rash on the skin. The creams for eczema, namely Protopic and Elidril cream, cause asthma. And the Protopic cream causes asthma in 16% of people who use it. So 16% of people who use this cream for their eczema will progress to an asthmatic attack. Now, we doctors are taught in medical school that eczema and asthma go together. If someone has eczema, then they're likely to develop asthma. And so, of course, it was presented to us doctors that there is some kind of relationship in that the eczema disease progresses on to become asthma. Well, if you look in this medical book of drugs, you find, holy cow, the creams we use to treat eczema actually cause or give rise to asthma. And a lot of kids get eczema as early as age 3 or 4. And so you're putting these creams on this 3 or 4-year-old, he develops asthma, and he says, yeah, you know, he had eczema, so I guess I was going to lead to asthma. And so that's a real shock, and that's how doctors are programmed to dismiss these medication side effects and instead attribute the therapy to the natural progression of the patient's disease instead of attributing the progression of illness to the therapy or the intervention. But it doesn't stop there. Of course, when children get vaccines, just by the way, they now have children's Motrin that the kids can take for the irritation of these vaccine shots. And guess what Motrin causes?
What's that?
Asthma. So you have the shot that causes asthma, the medication you give for the fever or pain from the vaccination, and that causes asthma. So children's Motrin causes asthma, and then even if you're in the older crowd, the arthritis medicines such as Indocin, Naprosyn, Anaprox also cause asthma. And in case you're trying to prevent a heart attack with your 1 aspirin a day, the 1 aspirin a day also causes asthma. So people are literally being attacked from all sides from different medications that cause asthma. Now, another class of medications that cause asthma are the hypertensive drugs, myocarditis, Prenosil, Coreg, Prednisone. All of these cause asthma. And this more than, more than explains the increased incidence of asthma, because prior to 1980, Prenosil and Prednisone really weren't in wide use. Neither was Coreg. So these newer drugs that we're now using to treat hypertension, which, by the way, is an illness, we only treat it to prevent heart attack. So in order to prevent a heart attack, we're actually giving people asthma. And then in case you have a headache, The new drugs for headaches, the injectable Imitrex as well as the tablets, the Emerge, another popular modern drug for migraine headaches, both cause asthma. And then, you know, if you're a little down or a little depressed or anxious, and maybe you want to take some Effexor or Paxil or Levipro or Celexa, all of these cause asthma. And so literally every stage of life is an assortment of drugs that are going to lead this poor, unfortunate person to asthma. And then, of course, there's antibiotics, Omnisef, Cipro. These are widely used antibiotics that lead to asthma. And then if you have emphysema, the inhalers or the inhaled nebulizers, Performist is one example, also cause asthmatic attacks. And so there's a whole assortment of drugs for various conditions, and you take the medication for the condition, and then asthma develops, and you're told, oh, the asthma is a development of your condition. It's kind of just grew out of your condition. And even Tricor cholesterol medication causes asthma. So if you're trying to prevent your heart illness by taking cholesterol medicine, aspirin, or platelet inhibitor like Agrinox, then all these things cause asthma. And I just want to mention one more class, which is indigestion. If you have indigestion and you're taking these neat little purple pills they have, the proton pump inhibitors that really just knock that acid reflux out of the box, so to speak, those medications give you asthma. That would be the Nexium and Protonix.
Wow, that is pretty interesting. Very interesting. We're going to take a quick station break for station identification. Just let everyone that's listening know that you're listening to the Blake Radio Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. And today's topic is assault against asthmatics. If you get a chance, please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risks for murder by medicine. Also, if you have questions, please call in to 914-338-0695. Again, that number is 914-338-0695. Now, Dr. Daniels, could you tell us a little bit about the asthma therapies themselves?
Yes. This is really just a phenomenal thing. I can tell you, when I was practicing medicine, I just felt so disappointed in the asthma therapies, because I was all excited to give people these inhalers and medications and just watch them open up and breathe and be able to live a normal life, and that is not at all what happened. And so I was very, very disappointed. Nevertheless, I actually recommended asthma therapy and inhalers until I would say about 3 or 4 years into my practice, I said to myself, you know what, these things just really are not working. And then I started recommending teas, and the teas started working very well. And I could replace one or two inhalers just by having a person drink a cup of tea. We'll talk more about that later. But I want to tell you the case of one patient came to my office and listened to her lungs and what they had to say. And I said, you know what? You have bronchospasm, which, of course, is narrowing of the bronchus, or narrowing of these tubes in the lungs. I said, and you need an inhaler. Here's an inhaler, and let me show you how to use this inhaler. And so, of course, I'd never used an inhaler before, but I'd given instructions many times on how to use an inhaler. So I decided this time, what the heck, I'm going to do a demonstration. And so the way the asthmatic is supposed to use the inhaler is take a deep breath in, exhale out every last piece of air, and then squeeze the inhaler and suck in as they squeeze. And take a big inhale, drawing the medicine all the way into their airways and all the way down to your lungs. So I did this, and my God, it set off such an outrageous coughing fit. I said, wow, I've never felt so lousy in my life. And so I said, well, that's how you use the inhaler. And so, of course, I gave the patient the prescription and the inhaler and everything. Then I saw the patient back about 2 weeks later. I said, well, how's your breathing? Oh, that's just okay. I said, well, how's the inhaler work? I said, oh, I didn't use it. I said, well, how come? He said, after I saw what I did to you, I said, I wasn't going to touch that stuff. So that's what happened. Of course, I never touched an inhaler again in my life. And I, even though I did instruct people how to use it, I did not do any demonstrations on it. But now I see why it would actually be prudent for people not to take inhalers, and why it was a good idea for me not to do any more demonstrations for my patients. I really could have polished myself off here. Well, it turns out that Advair, inhaled medication, which combines steroids, which is anti-inflammatory, powerful anti-inflammatory, and a beta agonist, which is a medicine that helps open up airways, causes asthmatic attacks. And it causes candida as well, which is a lung infection that can worsen asthma. So on two levels, it worsens asthma. And then there's Flovent, which is an inhaled corticosteroid that also causes asthmatic attacks. And then there's Symbicort, another asthmatic medication inhaler, and that causes asthmatic attacks. Now, also I mentioned Flonase, which is a nasal steroid spray, as well as Nasonex and Nasacort. All three of these, which are really baseline treatment for allergies, cause asthma. And if you go to the website of the Asthma Foundation, they will tell you that allergies lead to asthma. Allergies and asthma just go together. And so often what you have is you have children who have allergies. They're given a steroid nasal inhaler. As a result, they develop asthma. And with Flonase, the progression to asthma is as high as 7.2%. 7.2% of people. Yeah, that's quite a progression. And, you know, you have the doctor who's trained to see this progression as a natural progression of the patient's disease, requiring, of course, even more therapy. But actually, when you see someone with allergies and they progress on to asthma, it's often the result of therapy that the doctor gave, because these allergy sprays cause asthma.
That is very, very...
Yeah, it's really interesting. Now, the other thing with asthma is, how deadly is it really? What are we talking about here? Well, it turns out that you have 3,700 people a year, call it 4,000 people a year, dying of asthma. You have 25 million asthmatics. That is a death rate of 1 in 10,000. So to put that in perspective, there are 311 million people living in the United States, and 2.4 million of them die every year. That's a death rate of 1 in 1,000. So death rate for asthmatics is literally one-tenth the death rate of the population at large. Now, so we're dealing with essentially a disease that's less deadly than just living in America, so to speak. But let's turn the time back to, again, before 1980, because before 1980 and after 1980, apparently there was something happened. So I was in medical school around about 1980, and this thing called asthma, they talked about this disease in medical school class called asthma. And of course, I had never even seen anyone with asthma, let alone met anybody with asthma. Here I was, 24 years old at the time. So the professor said, now, asthma has been around for a very long time. And asthma used to be a disease. We used to think it was simply an emotional illness. People would get upset and they would get an asthma attack. Let's say mom would tell her daughter to do the dishes. Daughter didn't want to do the dishes, but she would just have an asthma attack. So this was an emotional issue. And then we started treating asthma with medications. And then people started dying of asthma, and it became a serious life-threatening disease. So, of course, I asked the wrong question, which was, well, why don't we just stop treating it? Maybe it'll go back to being not deadly anymore. Maybe the treatment be deadly? He says, oh, no, Jennifer, not possible. It's a life-threatening illness now, so we can't possibly leave it untreated, because, of course, people would die. And so you have here a kind of a circular reasoning going on. And we see this in another area, which is diabetics, for example. So in the United States, they will not do a diabetic trial where you have one group of diabetics untreated, another group of diabetics receive therapy. So, of course, there's never the opportunity to determine that a group of people might actually do as well or even better without therapy, because it's deemed unethical to withhold therapy because it's presumed the therapy is improving the situation, when actually there's actually little evidence of that, especially when you see that the list of medications commonly used for asthma actually cause it. So in medical school, we were told that this disease was relatively not deadly. Okay, so now let's say a person's taking theophylline. Theophylline is a common medication for asthma. And theophylline is so hazardous that it's recommended that you do theophylline levels to determine if the person is being poisoned by their theophylline. So you can give someone a certain strength of theophylline, say 100 milligrams, and their level can vary from day to day depending on how well the liver or kidneys are functioning and how well actually the heart is functioning. So it's easy for a asthmatic on theophylline to develop a toxic dose of what we call theophylline poisoning or theophylline overdose, even if the doctor's prescribing what the PDR says is a therapeutic dose. Okay. So if you take theophylline and your level becomes high in the toxic range, your death rate rises then to 100 deaths per 1,000. That's up from one death per 10,000. So as you go from a risk of one death in 10,000 to a risk of 1,000 deaths in 10,000. And that's on the low end. It can actually go much higher than 10%. And even actually what can go from 1% to 10%. So it can go as high as 1,000 per 10,000. And so that's a phenomenal, astronomical increase in death rate as a result of therapy. And I'm just going to presume for a moment that the theophylline overdoses are accidental. In other words, that the doctor is prescribing the medicine according to the PDR directions, but because of the patient's internal environment, maybe a variation in their liver function, their kidney function, or their heart function, the level becomes toxic. And this actually, when I was training in medicine, that was a common reason for admission. So asthmatics would commonly come in on theophylline, and you couldn't tell if they were sick because of the theophylline or if they were sick because of the asthma. So this is really a common issue with asthmatics.
Okay. Thank you very much for that, Dr. Daniels. We're going to take a quick break again to do a station identification. For those that are joining us, you're listening to The Blake Radio, and this is Rainbow Soul with Dr. Daniels. This show is the Assault Against Asthmatics. Get a chance, please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risk for murder by medicine. Also, if you have a question, please call in at 914-338-0695. Again, that number is 914-338-0695. But Dr. Daniels, can you give sum up the attack on asthmatics for us, please?
Excuse me?
Could you please sum up the attack on asthmatics, please?
Oh, okay, certainly. Basically, asthmatics are under attack more so by the standard of care and the medications they take. That is literally their biggest fear in terms of their health and their safety. That's number one. Number two, there have been cultural changes in the way that the population in the United States is medicated. whether it's the posture of taking aspirin a day, taking certain cholesterol medications, getting certain vaccines like the flu shot, they've really made the frequency of asthma increase tremendously. And it's these factors we need to look to in terms of reducing our asthma. Because if you don't have asthma, then you can't take asthma medications and you won't get exposed to the increased death, which occurs when the asthmatic is admitted to the hospital. So in summary, the attack on the asthmatic is from drugs that we now use indiscriminately on a preventative basis for the whole population. And these people are developing asthma as a result of that practice. And then once they develop asthma, they develop a deadly situation, which comes about because they were on the therapy for asthma. Now, I'd like to end the show on a really upbeat note and say that, you know, escaping the attack on asthmatics is something that really everybody can do. First thing is to say, okay, what can I do to keep from getting asthma, to not be in that unlucky crowd? Well, first of all, you can refuse these vaccines that are known to cause asthma. And that's the quadruple combo at birth. That's the Gardasil and the flu shot. And if you're in the older crowd, it's the shingles vaccine. So these are vaccines that if you don't want asthma, these are good ones to pass on. And then, of course, there's all the other categories of drugs that people can avoid if they don't want to have asthma. So that's the avoidance thing. Now, it turns out there are dietary things that you can do that will reduce your incidence of asthma. And certain foods have a higher frequency of asthma. If you're eating white flour, if you're eating corn, believe it or not, something as simple as corn, if you're eating sugar and dairy, these are all things that can make asthma worse. And kind of as a marketing thing, you know, one thing marketers always try to do is they try and figure out where their population hangs out, so where their customers hang out. So if you're selling asthma medicines, where do your customers hang out? Well, if you're selling asthma medicines, you know that most of your customers are drinking a lot of milk. So what do? You put your advertising for your asthma medicines and for asthma on the milk containers because people who are asthmatic drink a lot of milk. Of course, you can flip that around and say, well, there might be a relationship between the two, and if they didn't drink the milk, they wouldn't be asthmatic. But that's an interesting piece of just kind of marketing trivia there. So diet is a big component. So if you have asthma, there's a dietary component, and then there's the drug component. There are herbs that people can take to help with their asthma. But the most powerful thing an asthmatic can take is water. And what water does is it thins the mucus and it helps open those airways so that the person can breathe. It makes that mucus thinner and makes those airways more flexible. And so one question is, well, what kind of water? And it's easier to say what not to drink, which is tap water, so leave the tap water alone. And probably nowadays even the bottled water would not be recommended. So the thing to do would be to get a purifier in the house of any kind. Even a low-end purifier like Brita would be of some help, and that's something that's extremely affordable. Then you can go all the way up to the high end where you get into the whole, you know, reverse osmosis and various other filters. But definitely avoid the drugs, avoid the chemicals, because all of these things will set off the asthma. So it's really important to... if you're asthmatic, avoid these triggers. Get yourself well hydrated. That'll thin out your mucus. And definitely, you know, avoid all drugs. And by way of doing that, people can visit vitalitycapsules.com. And I have a free report there that gives people non-drug therapies for 10 common infections. And so that's something that would be really helpful for an asthmatic, because once you get on the antibiotic merry-go-round for an asthmatic, it is a really dangerous ride because you take the antibiotics. The antibiotics may or may not treat an infection that you may or may not have had, but then they give you a candida or a yeast infection. The yeast infection takes hold in your lungs, and then you're really in a much worse category than you were before. So that's what you have to do. Now, high-dose vitamin C is another thing, which is just wonderful. I found that really nice for asthmatics. Now, the dosage of vitamin C varies according to person, according to weight, a lot of other things. But as a rule of thumb, a dose of vitamin C less than 3 grams a day is usually not of any benefit. And they've done studies, the medical people have done studies on vitamin C, and they always test vitamin C doses of 1 gram a day or less. And so they do these studies testing 1 gram a day of vitamin C, and they say, oh, look, see, vitamin C doesn't work, useless, no good. And if you have experience with vitamin C, then you know, at least from a healing perspective, that 3 grams is really the starting point, and you go up to there, up from there. And Linus Pauling, or the late, great Linus Pauling, would even go as high as 45 grams a day. I'm not suggesting you do that on your own, but I want to give you a perspective that there is a therapeutic range, and it's actually pretty pretty broad.
That was very very informative. As far as what do we have on tap for next week?
Well, next week is really exciting because next week we're going to talk about suicide. We're going to talk about how a lot of what's called suicide in the United States may not really be suicide. And it may actually be a result of, again, of therapeutic practices.
Wow, that's a catch right there.
Yeah. When we were in medical school, I'll just give you a kind of a little kind of sneak preview. We took a course in course psychiatry, and they would show us parade all these obviously crazy people in front of us. And they say, but, you know, sometimes a really crazy person will come in, and, of course, they'll be depressed. We'll put them on antidepressants. And you have to give them that first pill right there in the office, because if you don't, they might not take that medicine. And then on the way home, the person commits suicide. And it was explained to us in medical school that the person just came to the office too late. Had they come to that office, honest to God, just 2 days earlier, that pill would have had time to kick in and they would have been doing just fine. And so, of course, as a medical student, this left me in a state of confusion, kind of scratching my head. But it turns out that a lot of medicines you would not even suspect lead to suicidal thoughts, and even committing suicide. And these medicines are hiding in the darndest places.
Wow, that's great. Well, I'm looking forward to that topic. That is a hot topic our listeners will want to share with their family and friends. Also, I would like to give a quick station break and let everybody know that you've been listening to The Blake Radio, and it's Rainbow Soul, and this is Healing with Dr. Daniels, and today's topic was assault against asthmatics. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risks for murder by medicine. Dr. Daniels, do you have any last statements that you'd like to say before we end?
Well, yeah, I just like to, I didn't mention my disclaimer that anything you hear in this radio show obviously is not medical advice. There's no plan to cure, diagnose, or treat any condition. And, of course, you should always talk to your medical healer or your professional healer, whoever that might be, before you make any changes, whatever, in what you may or may not be doing. And, of course, my opinions are absolutely not those of the station. But in final remarks, in terms of the topic at hand, is it just gives you so much more peace of mind, I think, once you understand where the real hazard lies. And it empowers you to at least remove yourself from the hazard and not spend your time worrying about the boogeyman or worrying about things that will just never happen. So, sure, asthma can strike anybody, but it strikes a lot less often if you don't take the medications that create it. And sure, asthma can strike anybody, but it happens a lot less often if you don't eat the foods that create it. And so I'd like to encourage people to visit vitalitycapsules.com /find out to take a survey on their risk of murder by medicine. And also just visit vitalitycapsules.com and can sign up for a free report and continue to get news that can heal.
Thank you, Dr. Daniels. Well, I would like to say until next time, healing with Dr. Daniels, and please visit us next week. It'll be Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time to hear the next topic from Dr. Daniels.